Hello, it's Friday. That means another edition of the Zogby Report, real and unscripted. And as I always like to remind everybody, it is real and it is unscripted. And I'm here with my son, Jeremy. We're in two different locations. I'm in Virginia. Jeremy's back home. How are you doing?
Doing good, pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, thanks. Lots going on and so many things are flying back and forth at us. I just got an email a couple of hours ago overnight from France, a very good columnist for L'Opinion. And basically the gist of the interview via email was, is this the end of Joe Biden? And while we're at it, is this the end of Donald Trump? And the background on all of that is that for Joe Biden, here it is now July, and he doesn't have his infrastructure plan. He didn't meet his goal of 70% of Americans vaccinated. And for that matter, the economy is shaky a little bit, and his numbers, we're starting to see them chisel away. And the end of Donald Trump, you have the indictment against his organization for tax violations, and most particularly his longtime CFO, who prosecutors are looking to leverage to get at the big guy, Donald Trump himself. So, is that a good topic?
Sure.
Okay. So here are my thoughts. The end of Joe Biden, come on, let's chill. It's July, and no, he did not get his infrastructure plan, and the economy is a little squidgy right now. I think, I'm not even going to say he's in trouble. His polling numbers are at about 52%. Last couple of polls are down a little bit, but they're still above 50%. We're seeing now his approval on the economy going down a few points. I think notably more about inflation than it is about unemployment or employment. He did not meet some of his goals regarding infrastructure and COVID. But nonetheless, I think that infrastructure is still salvageable. I don't know that it'll be in a week or two, but I think it's still salvageable. And if necessary, he'll have to use what we call the nuclear option, which is through reconciliation, and therefore not needing any Republicans. But it was encouraging that at least some Republicans came up with some form of a compromise. So way too soon in the media sense of things to declare anybody's presidency dead. And then is this the end of Donald Trump? And I say, come on, hardly. This is the kind of stuff upon which Donald Trump, Trump triumphs. That yes, it's not good that his organization's been indicted. Probably even worse that his longtime 50-year, I guess, CFO has been indicted as well, and that this man could sing. But I think, I'm trying to be very nonpartisan about this, when I looked at the charges against the company, I have to say that my reaction was ho-hum. After all this time, all this money, and all this hype, this is the best that you can do, that he avoided taxes by paying for apartments, paying for perks, not declaring those as income. Look, that's against the law, and that's wrong. But I'm not so sure that that's warrants of, you know, a death to mankind and the world as we know it kind of headline. And so I suspect that, not that this is all to do about nothing, but in the final analysis, this is going to come off a lot like the way the impeachment came off, intensely partisan, and Donald Trump thriving on this kind of sense that, oh, there they go again. Look at what the Democrats are doing. Look at what the fake news is doing. And so I think we're right back to where we started from, except we have to suffer through this crap for a long time. You're nodding your head. That's always a good sign, Jim.
Well, you know, I love the way you closed it, the last minute. I think that's spot on. Here we are again. Here it goes again. Everything is laid out wonderfully, and we can tie it all together. But the key word, thriving. Yes, Trump does thrive off of this stuff. I mean, of course he thrives off of this stuff. You go back to his election, and I mean, here's an objective fact. I think we can agree on this. I think Donald Trump was the first president in the history of American presidents that didn't get the presidential honeymoon. I mean, from day one, it was a media blitz. There was not simmering anger, there was overboiling anger in the sense that he was falsely elected, that he was not the real president. I mean, you essentially had, not in the physical landscape per se, a civil war, but you had in the media landscape, a civil war. There was a civil war of the mind between these two factions from day one. And so when are they going to realize that it doesn't work? All it does is make his base believe in him more, because he ran on anti-establishment. And so when the corporate media are in lockstep with bold stories and let's say flimsy evidence, I mean, I'm sorry, objectively looking at it, the Steele dossier had no legs. You just embolden what he says. You have to come up with something sophisticated. You have to come up with something better. Keeping in line with objective observations, this is just going on both sides. You could say, well, Trump and his organizations and his family are corrupt. The Trump people can come back and say, well, look at the Biden family, look at Burisma, you know, look at Hunter. And so, I mean, is this really what the essence of politics is? Unfortunately, it can become that way. It starts from the top down, though. It starts with journalism. So if we don't demand better from our journalists, we're going to keep getting the same junk information. It's like junk food. It's toxic. It doesn't get us anywhere. I have to say, going back to the French journalist that you were talking about, the first thing that jumped to my mind was opinions from abroad are very important. And especially, look, if it's coming from France, it's very important. The French, in a historical sense, are cousins, right? I mean, we share a lot of similar values, no question about it. So when I hear a journalist from abroad, I'm likely to highly value that, because it's an outside opinion, and it's not, they're not within this mess that we have right now. So it right there gives it some credibility. Step two, in what the questions he asked, he was fair and objective. He said both the end of Biden and Trump. You're right. It's not the end of Biden. It's not the end of Trump. But what I think he was getting at, maybe, what he might have been trying to say was the end of this system as we know it. How much longer can it go on? I'm going to stop here, but I'm going to throw in a theme that I'm going to revisit, and I'm going to talk about the Great Reset, right? But this ties in. It's just, as I keep asking, you know, throughout this podcast, if we are to have a Great Reset, a reset of the system, should it come from the elite or should it come from the people? Essentially, the question is power to the people or power to the elite. How do we get that Great Reset through one of those two avenues?
Okay, very good. You want to talk about the Great Reset during this podcast?
I'll tie it in somehow. I mean, okay. I'm sure it's easy to do, but
there's another topic that just popped into my mind. You know about me, and I know about you, We both love and studied a lot of history. And so just yesterday, C-SPAN came out with its regular presidential greatness poll, ranking the presidents. And there are a bunch of things that stuck out in my mind. Here are three that a little surprising to some. Donald Trump was ranked 41 out of 44, as opposed to 44. So in other words, he still is ahead of Buchanan, Pierce, and Andrew Johnson, who were highly regarded as the worst presidents. But then comes Donald Trump. And the question mark is that with some historical perspective down the road, just as some presidents actually change their positions, is there potential for Donald Trump to move up or move down? So that's question number one. Question number two is that Barack Obama, it was rated number 10, made it in the top 10. Now, this is quite a category. This puts him in with two Roosevelts, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Dwight Eisenhower, Harry Truman, Ronald Reagan, and Jack Kennedy. That's pretty heady company to be in. And then thirdly, really a bunch of surprises, I have to say. Bill Clinton down six notches from 13th in the previous poll to 19. And the suggestion that that Clinton could go even lower with some historical perspective. Anything that jumps out at you?
Well, I mean, just more philosophically. Because, well, first off, I owe a great deal of respect and I have to pay homage to a professor that changed my way of thinking completely. If somehow you're listening out there, Professor Sargent, I can't thank you enough. He was a professor at Union College, and he took me, a kid who was stuck almost entirely in the field of American history and progressive thought, to which he was a progressive himself, and turned me into a world historian and a comparative historian. And I have never been the same after that. I never wanted to study world history. I detested it. I wanted to be an 11th grade history teacher teaching American history. And I turned into a 9th and 10th grade global studies teacher, and for the better. So the point of that is, the pinnacle of history to me is world history, because of it glosses over, it covers space and time. In a chronological sense, it goes back tens of thousands of years. And so you get that depth. And then in the sense of space, it covers the whole span of the globe. And so the problem with American historians, from my point of view and from this point of view, is that they're inherently parochial. I think they tend to be more ideological. I think they have a more difficult time transcending ideology. I would personally trust more a ranking of US presidents from somebody who studied ancient history, Western civilization and Eastern civilization, and the whole globe of history, because you still get this left-right divide. And I don't think that historians living today, especially in these tumultuous times, can objectively rank the... I think it will always be ideological. But I'm not saying that any historian can truly become the equivalent of of Buddha, you know, and achieve nirvana, but they can get closer to it. So I'm skeptical of these rankings.
Okay. I find it curious that over the years, Dwight Eisenhower, who was initially ranked somewhere in the middle, 20, 21st, 22nd, is now right after, the overall is Lincoln the Greatest, Washington, Franklin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, and Dwight Eisenhower. That's something. Now, why Eisenhower? The interstate highway, a sensible foreign policy. He had a Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, that wanted to practice the policy of brinksmanship with the Soviet Union, which almost certainly would have led us to a hot war instead of the containment policy that that Eisenhower followed. Civil rights and overall moral leadership. What I find curious as well is that whereas Lyndon Johnson at one point had been in the high 20s, low 30s, because of the failure of Vietnam, has at some point reached number 10. He's number 11 in this latest poll, and that's because of civil rights, for starters, and the Great Society. And that Jimmy Carter, who had been mired in the 30s, 34, 35, is now moving up the ranks to 26. And who knows, maybe move up the line even more. But in any event, the real story is that this is the first rating.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who are your top three?
Lincoln, Washington, and Franklin Roosevelt. There's no...
Fascinating.
Yeah.
No argument there for me. Well, absolutely there's an argument.
No, from me.
Oh, from you. Okay. I would say, for me, and I would go in this order, George Washington, James Madison, and Thomas Jefferson. Now, we immediately understand the inherent contradiction in those founding fathers that they owned slaves. And But how do we still put them in the top three is understanding two things. Number one, 1776 and 1790, although were the start of the New World, it was still the tail end of the Old World. In other words, the entirety of human history and the darkness of human history, that is slavery, the Old World baggage, realistically wasn't going to stop with 1619, 1776, or 1790. Things don't happen overnight. That's not how history is. Evolution, it does have revolution, but even in revolution, there is still evolution. Number two, to take the perspective of constitutional historian Forrest MacDonald, who argued the reason why the founding fathers were great, although Charles Beard says in his economic analysis, Charles Beard, the great historian, said, well, they were just a class of landowners who created a revolution to consolidate their power. Is there truth to that? Yes. But Forrest MacDonald had this wonderful perspective that he said, true on the one hand, however, they created the ideals, that is civil rights and constitutional rights, that set forth for future generations. I mean, look at where we are today. Look at where we've been since 1964. That is universal suffrage. We have universal suffrage achieved within two centuries. I don't know that any other civilization can claim that. So it goes back to evolution versus revolution. In the grand scheme of things, 200 years is revolutionary in achieving universal suffrage. That is because of George Washington, James Madison, and Thomas Jefferson setting those rights in the tradition of rule of law and saying the words, all men are created equal and we have natural rights from our creator, so that future generations said, well, if all men are created equal, all women are created equal, if all white people are created equal, all colors are created equal. It was because of them.
I buy that. And here we are, ironically, in 2020 and 2021, where there are active efforts in almost every state to undo that universal manhood suffrage by limiting the right to vote. This is one of the crises that we face in the immediate. Well, I think we did a good job on a bunch of tough issues. You have anything else to add?
I would just say that what's fascinating is both sides feel that way. The Democrats feel that way, and the Republicans feel the same exact way. I guess time will tell who is right and which side, maybe both sides, are trying to take away our universal suffrage.
Have a good week. I'll talk to you in 5 minutes, but have a good week.
And in light of all of that, happy 4th, everybody.
Yep, thanks.